Makes me a little concerned to ever run into Thich Nhat Hanh. I'd have to prepare myself spiritually for that encounter. And that's a bit about what this service is about. So the coffee shop that I frequent, it turns out it's the local minister's hangout. I don't know what we're doing there, but I think that we're all writing our sermons. When I go there on a Friday afternoon and occasion a glance around the room, my eyes skip over at least three Bibles, a pile of theological texts, t-shirts promoting outdated God jokes, and multiple hymn books serving as coffee coasters. We go there, it seems, to compose ourselves as we compose the words to share. I went there this past Friday to write because I needed to be out in the world. I needed to be out in the world. I don't always write in the coffee shop, but when I know I have a particularly difficult topic to deal with, I go out in the world and see how the world speaks to me about that topic. The question I have for you is, which ridiculously difficult topic am I talking about? It could be either of the two that I've proposed for this service. I could mean redemption. That's a tough one for Unitarian Universalists. Or spiritual practice, an equally difficult one for us. Redemption is difficult for Unitarian Universalists because it is one of those bristle-worthy words, right? You hear it and you bristle. We hear it and we wonder, are you telling me that I need to be redeemed? Who are you to tell me that? Did I suddenly turn into a coupon when I wasn't looking? And what exactly might I be redeemed for? A carton of Cheese Whiz or 20 cents off? To be redeemed in the classic sense is to atone or to make amends for error or evil. In the colloquial sense, it's to gain or regain possession of something in exchange for payment. Yes, of course, this is a bristle-worthy word, one of those difficult theological terms. But I am equally concerned by the second topic, spiritual practice. This is not so much bristle-worthy, but yawn or shrug-worthy. Sure, we would do spiritual practice if we had any time, if it worked, if there were any out there that I could do with a cup of coffee in my hands, or if our kids wouldn't distract us, and so on, and so on. The phrase spiritual practice elicits more Unitarian Universalist excuses than any other. And what makes this challenge even more challenging is that in my understanding, redemption and spiritual practice are kin. They're sisters. They're two sides to one way of being. One is what we need, and the other is how we get it. Let me take a few steps back. We'll try and define or perhaps redefine what we mean when we talk about redemption. Or at least what I mean when I talk about redemption. First off, I can't say the word without hearing Bob Dylan and the band singing, "I Shall Be Released." I see my light come shining from the west unto the east any day now. Any day now, I shall be released. To be redeemed, it is to be released from whatever it is that ultimately or elementally holds us back. It is to release ourselves from whatever it is that steals our souls. Redemption is work. It is something that we do. Alcoholics in treatment use the 12 steps not to cure their disease, but to release themselves from the symptoms of their disease. a person in, that is beset with sadness for what their life is not can work to develop gratitude for what their life is and will in time release themselves from their lament to feel joy. To be redeemed, it is to be released from that which keeps us from experiencing the boldest gifts of existence, gratitude, peace, awe. And what we need, I'll say it that way, what we need to be released from, it's going to be somewhat different for each of us. But I think that I can speak with some universal accuracy about one particular illness of our age. I could say sin here, but since I'm not a glutton for punishment, I'll stick with illness. As I see it, one of the most universal, persistent illnesses of our age is distraction. Distraction. How could it not be, right? And I don't just mean smartphones and Twitter. I mean all of it, the postmodern big box store, endless internet, 99 TV channel distraction, to-do lists that are 7 pages long, computer screens that can take us anywhere around the globe. I mean all of it. There was a time when if you wanted bread, you'd have to bake it. And then there was a time when if you wanted bread, you would go to the local baker and buy whatever the baker had. And then there was a time when you could go to the grocery store and choose white or wheat. Now, my dear distracted ones, when we go to the grocery store, the bread order is a choice between unbleached or bleached, sprouted or whole, 12 grain or 9, rye or ancient, gluten-free or gluten-full, pita or pocket, low-fat, low-calorie, vegan or bacon-laced. If we don't habituate our choice, we could spend all of our attentiveness in the bread aisle, weighing the pros and cons of the 150 kinds of loaves of bread. Aren't you astounded, aghast? I am when I see an aisle of bread. After the first service, one of our military leaders came up to me and shared. She spent a long time in the military overseas in Afghanistan and Iraq, and she shared that her experience of coming back after being in the military was the experience of coming back to incredible choices and the distractedness that that brought. Because when she was there serving, she had one mission. When she got back, she had 150 kinds of bread. To be redeemed in our age is at least in part to be released from distraction. From the choices, from the options that do not really matter but steal our time. It is to be released from giving our attention to those things that do not fulfill us, and not only in the bread aisle. If it were that easy, I'd be preaching in Wegmans. The bread aisle is actually just an illustration of the potential distractions of our lives and how much we have to ignore, move through, get past, released to taste the spiritual depth of this existence. When was the last time that you paused in a ray of sunshine to feel its blessing on your face? The last time you sank deep into an ocean wave and allowed yourself to feel, to honestly feel the blessing of immersion. When was the last time you let your grief settle in so deep that all you could feel was the persistence of your love? When was the last time you focused so intently on your breath that you remembered, hey, I'm breathing. I'm actually breathing. And just like our prayer indicated, this breath I am breathing, this was breathed by Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, and the dinosaurs before that. The more we concentrate, the more we give our attention to that which sustains us, the less distracted we become. I spoke a bit earlier about gratitude. Sometimes I assume that gratitude is how I'll respond when I suddenly have plenty of joy, plenty of happiness. Gratitude is that thing that will come to me. No. Joy is what we get when we attune ourselves to gratitude. When we practice gratitude, it's the work that brings us joy, that brings us release, that brings us redemption. I know Doreen here does a daily gratitude practice, and so I kept feeling your presence while sharing those words. And that's a great smile to illustrate that, yes, a gratitude practice brings joy. Distractions as diverse as bread aisles and constant Twitter feeds, the antagonisms of traffic, the endless to-do lists, any number of discomforts disconnect us from our core salves of our existence. Sustenance, gratitude, connection, salves that can literally be found in a moment of spiritual practice. If and only if we let that practice take hold. Yes, of course, we are of this world, and we have to do our work in this world, and I don't expect any of us to don an orange monk's robe, except maybe John. I could see that at some point in time. We don't need to, however, head off to a hermitage. But what we do need are moments of release. You work so very hard. You work hard at making this a better world. Why not attune yourself to feel the blessing of that better world? It will not only preserve your spirit, it will steel your soul for more service. And if it helps, you might actually think of redemption here as a coupon. We trade in a plethora of choices. We trade in the confounding dilemmas of our time for a moment of honing our attention on the simple promise of peace. Remember our reading that John shared? John, that Buddhist monk, the teacher, he cut right to the quick, didn't he? He also cut right through all the potential distractions. He didn't exchange the usual distracting pleasantries. How are you? Where are you from? Who makes your shoes? He instead said, do you remember?
Are you happy?
Are you happy? It is spiritual practice to cut right through distraction, to concentrate on what ultimately matters. Spiritual practice is the means, the method by which we hone our attention. Now, here is where this gets almost comic. It would get comic if it weren't so tragic. Unitarian Universalists, when we go to the spiritual practice store to choose our spiritual practice, a bread aisle looms before us. There's prayer. There's gluten or God-free or God-full prayer. There's meditation, walking, talking, dancing, singing, chanting, Hindu, Zen, Buddhist, Tai Chi, meditation. There's yoga, fire breathing, fire walking, fire ant dancing, writing, fire ant writing, solo or group contemplation, deep listening, deep thinking. Ever and anon. Before we can even get to the concentration, we have to fight off the distraction of endless options. And for a people determined to make the best choices, this might sound sacrilegious, but it doesn't actually matter what you choose. Any number of spiritual practices can serve you well. Sure, this vegetarian bids you to steer clear of animal sacrifice. But other than that, the particular choice matters so much less than actually choosing. You might want to choose one that you're familiar with, or one you might want to stretch to learn. And if you're stumped, you could just let Lord Google choose for you. Make the virtual dart throw. Ask Siri. Eliminate excuses. And then practice. First, maybe just 1 minute a day. 10 seconds if you can't do 1 minute. and then 1 minute, and then maybe 5 minutes a day. Attention is an action, not a skill. It's something we hone, not something we have. I do yoga, I breathe, and I pray. Intern John, who is perhaps one of the busiest people in the room with his nearly full-time job and this half-time internship, pauses every single time he comes here for a walk to the Thai Buddhist temple. He does a walking meditation. There's a great quote that I remember. Stop looking for happiness in the same place you lost it. Stop looking for happiness in the same place you lost it. Perhaps we lost some happiness in the aisles of distraction that demand our attention, or in the bewildering complexity that confounds our lives. Perhaps we lost a bit of the sense of connection, or bliss, or joy, or awe, or wonder in the bread aisle, or even in that spiritual practice aisle. Perhaps we lost our sustenance, our gratitude, our connection in the fight for a better world, when the fight left us exhausted and frayed. Perhaps that next moment of awe, that sustenance for the spiritual warrior's soul, is just 3 breaths away. Will you breathe with me? Any day now, any day now, I shall be released. Amen.